Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, where we will be finding common ground and taking it to the next level. I'm your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. This show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. It's my hope that you will come to see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same. This is a no-holds-barred show. My guests will have differing spiritual belief systems, and some will have no spiritual beliefs. You may or you may not agree with things that are said. What I'd ask you to do is keep an open mind. This way you can see where you can find common ground so that you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. Now today I have a return guest, Dr. Stephen Wexler. Dr. Steve, as his patients call him, is a graduate of the Palmer School of Chiropractic and has been in private practice in Syracuse, New York for over 25 years. His love for knowledge and health brought him to India to study Ayurveda, a sister science of yoga, as well as other spiritual matters. Breaking free of a speech impediment in 1988 at a transformational seminar, Dr. Steve went on to host many live radio and television shows, as well as teach chiropractic Ayurvedic seminars throughout the world. From a recent car accident resulting in injury and surgery, Dr. Steve has discovered healing with light from LED and cold laser to increase the velocity of the healing of the body. He's involved in the community through weekly spiritual gatherings and volunteer work as a chiropractor and adaptive ski instructor, as well as being a community event organizer. And so I'd like to welcome Steve. Steve, how are you doing today?
I'm very well, David. Thank you so much for having me on again.
You're welcome. How's your recovery coming?
You know, it's really, really good. And it's, you know, when we talk about recovery, we think it's physical. But it's physical, it's mental, it's emotional, it's spiritual. You know, we go through our downs and ups. And, you know, from the ups, they're coming a little higher each time. So probably physically, you know, about 80% better. And just diving into life in whatever way I'm able.
Oh, that's great. Well, let's explore that a little bit, because you were just telling me about a woman who healed herself from lymphoma. And I've heard of many people that have healed themselves from terminal illnesses. I've had on an amazing guest who had stage 4 breast cancer who healed herself. I had on another guest who had an autoimmune condition, and she went to the mountains in Brazil and healed herself. And she was an MD, and she practiced non-traditional medicine in order to heal herself. What's been your experience around that?
Well, you know, we all have this terminal illness called life. You know, life does come to an end for all of us. But it's, Are we living while we're alive? And this woman, who I just actually recently met, her husband actually came in for some care and was telling me about his wife's journey. And I was fascinated by it, but he was more fascinated that I actually knew what he was talking about. His wife had lymphoma. She had a large tumor around her aortic artery and a large tumor around her renal artery. And she saw another family member go through chemotherapy. And towards the end of their life and their suffering brought them to research different ways and modalities of healing. She decided, well, instead of go the route of chemo, she was going to go this other route, a route that has been very well established. It's called the Gerson Clinic. And there's one down in Mexico near San Diego, and they do this incredible routine of, her husband went down there with her, of juicing. But they don't use like centrifugal juices, the ones that spin and cut. they use juices that press the vegetables and fruits so you don't break the bonds of the cell walls. So actually the juice has energy for many hours, not seconds to minutes or sometimes none at all. And supplementation and coffee enemas and, you know, different routines that you learn, so then you go home and practice it. And her church really gathered around her, cleaning vegetables, helping her juice, helping her take care of her day. And the doctors, even up here, the oncologists, saw the blood supply to the tumors retreat and then die off. Because without,
wow,
you know, the body, when the body gets cancer or heart disease or diabetes or arthritis or even mental illness, it's not because the body is stupid, you know. I always say God doesn't make junk. We just treat it that way. But if
right.
you give the body the raw materials, you know, it does with it what it can. So, you know, if you're – so she spent all this time, many, many months, you know, eating naturally. She's doing macrobiotic style of eating now. Her body responded. It had the energy to heal. It had the energy to go, oh, this isn't right. I need to clean this up before I move on. And she got better, and now she's in the process of kind of stepping back into life healthy. And her thing was she'd rather die healthy than die sick, you know, like under like a kind of toxic haze with you know, and again, there's a risk on both sides. There's a risk to doing chemotherapy, and there's a risk not doing it and doing another routine, not a, you've heard the line, you know, denial is not just another river in Egypt. Like,
yes,
denial never works, you know. You just can't deny something away. But she really took it on, and her husband took it on, and her church took it on, because you really need a community to heal.
Well, you know, it's interesting. We both belong to Unity Church, and both the founders of Unity used a spiritual approach by not denying but affirming that children of God do not inherit illness. Well, I guess that's a form of denial as well as affirmation. But Myrtle Fillmore healed herself from tuberculosis, and her husband actually grew a leg, which was shorter than the other. And I think that that's amazing. And it seems to be a slightly different approach. But to me, I believe that all healing starts at a spiritual level, and that we need to make up our minds that we do not inherit disease, that we are whole and complete as we are, and that whatever dis-ease we experience within us can manifest as disease.
So true. You know, we live our lives either in some state of either being unconscious or conscious or somewhere in between. And what I live for these days, what really moves me, is really living in that state of transformation. And transformation, you know, when you go through a transformative experience or a real aha moment, it sometimes lasts about that long. It's like, whoa. And then you realize, you know, oh, I still have to do the dishes and do the laundry and take care of the relationships in our lives and the business. And you have to revisit transformation, you know, weekly, daily, hourly, every moment. And then you end up swimming in transformation. Your transformation spills over to those around you. And that's why it's important to have a life that transforms you and transforms others around you. That's what jazzes me. That's my choice in life. So I participate as much as I can in many different ways to have transformation in my life.
Would you be willing to share some of your experiences with transformation?
Sure. I can go back to some of the early ones. I mean, you know, I grew up, I was terrified to swim. My mother had a cousin who died in a canoe accident, which I didn't know till later on in life, but she really discouraged me and made me fearful of the water. So I went to summer camp, and swimming is a huge part of summer camp. And I remember that one day I just said, okay, I'm going to do this. And I went and took the swimming test in that year of summer camp when I was 12. And I thought something was wrong because I swam and I got out of the pool and I was like, well, where was all the drowning and fear and spitting and choking? And because that's all I had that in my mind. So it was like a transformation to actually step in and do it. You know, you can't learn swimming from a book. And I just watched kids swim. So I didn't even know I knew how to swim. I just got in and I swam. And that really, that changed me. You know, it allowed me to go, wow, I should try things, you know, in my life. And swimming became a huge part of my life. And the way I found out my mother's cousin died in a canoe accident was I called my mother when I think I was 15. And I said, Mom, I just got a new job at camp. I'm the canoe counselor. And you could, you know, hear my mother fall on the other end of the line. And my mother actually took up swimming after that. And that was a wonderful thing. Yeah. She was by the time she was like 55, she could really swim. She'd go to the pool and she'd swim laps. And so my transformation caused other transformation in my mother. Mm. And I actually taught swimming in college. I taught different levels of lifeguarding and things like that. And that was just a wonderful experience. Another big transformation was when I started in... So my life up until chiropractic school, my high school, my college years, they were fairly run-of-the-mill. I was a tired, kind of slothy, kind of a dull person, like really dull. I was overweight. I was just tired. And I was a kid. And I went to a seminar, and I think I talked about this in the last time we spoke, with Tony Robbins. Tony Robbins just...
Yes, you did. Tell us about it.
Wrote a new book called Money. And it's those same principles. Like, you know, you put something out in front of you. So I showed up at the seminar really just like my brother paid for it. I might as well go. My mother went with me. And it was amazing. We did a firewalk first night. We walked on 12 feet of 2,000-degree coals, and it was amazing. But it was a barbary. It was, wow, oh, my God, I just walked on 2,000-degree coals. But what do you do with that? You know, where do you go with that? Transformation, even transformation like, which is so amazing and remarkable, only lasts a second, a minute, as long as you can tell the story over and over to your friends. What the real transformation came was the next two days, we really worked the personality. I was fearful. I was afraid to speak in front of people. As you mentioned, I was a stutterer. And I stuttered to the point where I could not function well reading something out loud in front of people. That was like the scare. Like, couldn't even imagine doing what I'm doing here. Even though I'm sitting alone in a room talking on a phone would be nerve-wracking. It would be an expression of sweating and being really scared. But in those 2 days, we got to transform our lives. We got to take things that really happened, events, and we got to change the meaning of them. And we used different neuro-linguistic programming techniques, making things smaller, changing the color, changing the tone. And what was transformative about it is I did that for a whole year. I took those 2 days, and I lied in bed every day and really helped transform the meaning of my life. The last day, which was probably the most important day, was a day called Living Health, where we learned that what you put in your mouth and what comes out of your mouth makes a huge difference to to your well-being. So the kinds of food you put in, the kinds of liquid you put into your mouth, but also what you speak, you know, what you're talking about on a daily basis makes an incredible difference in your life and your health and well-being. So those were two instances early on in my life, and I realized that I want to live a life of transformation.
Well, it's interesting when you were talking about the importance of what you speak. It reminded me of how everything starts at a thought level, which leads to feelings, it leads to words, it leads to actions, behaviors. I've heard it said that every word is a prayer, and I like to believe that every thought is a prayer too, and that when we're conscious and aware, then we can pave the way to leading more of a spiritual life instead of a life that's just ruled by our unconsciousness. How do you practice staying aware, and how do you practice staying in touch with what comes out of your mouth?
Well, the two very big parts of my life is my spiritual teacher, Sai Ma Lakshmi Devi. I've had a spiritual teacher since 1990 who was her spiritual teacher, Satya Sai Baba. You know, we use the word guru. Guru means the dispeller of darkness. If you spell it out, it spells G-U-R-U. It's about learning about who you are, who your essence is, and how to express that. So, you know, when I met Satya Sai Baba and his teaching in 1990, it really transformed me into a better person. It didn't change me into a better person. See, the difference between change and transformation. So change is like if you had an orange and you decided to eat an apple. You know, that's change. But if you have a circle, right, you have a circle and make it into a sphere, that's transformation. That's multidimensionality. So with Sai Baba's teachings, it wasn't just about doing good. It was really about the beingness of serving others, about the, you know, your thought, word, deed, action, heart, all moving in the same direction. So I became transformed into a person of service. And that, then when you do service, you become more transformed. So that was a tool of transformation. Like, part of, you know, my life, as you were saying, is I teach skiing to people with disabilities. And some are children, some are adults. I lived with a woman for a few years who worked in my office. And, you know, serving people to bring out the highest potential in them causes me transformation. A good friend of mine came up with, you've heard of the word selfish, obviously, and you've heard of the word selfless. But we really need to be self-full. Like, we need to be so full of transformation, so full of love, so full of joy, that it, like, spills over. And that's what
you know,
give
I've
away.
Never had, yeah, I've never heard that word selfful. That's that is opening my eyes. When you were talking earlier, I was thinking about the dualistic world we live in and how, as human beings, we have a light and a dark side. And the challenge for me and for all of us, as I see it, is to discover the light within us and let go of the dark side, let go of those negative qualities that are fear-based, that are selfish in motivation, and move towards qualities that are embraced by the heart and by love. How have you worked that in your life?
Well, again, it's like, who are you being while you do something? You know, in my vocation as a chiropractor, an Ayurvedic practitioner, a light therapist, you know, I could do the business of it, I could do the motions of it, or I can come from my heart as I do it. I actually had a woman observe in my office, and she's like, so how do you get these people better, you know, from their neck pain, back pain, arthritis, inflammation? And like the first thing I do is I fall in love with them, you know? I care for them. And from that comes the genius of working with them. I had this great experience last week. It was just a phenomenal experience. A nun came up from an area of the country for some care, and it was incredible. Just we both met on the spiritual plane, you know? That didn't matter my dogma or her dogma. It's like we met in that place of love and acceptance and caring for each other. And we both walked out of that experience more transformed human beings. You know, you've heard that, you know, we're not human doings, we're human beings. So we
right.
need to have practices in our lives that we can be more. You know, I'm involved in another path called Landmark Education, and I'm a graduate of what they call the Landmark Forum. And in the Landmark Forum, you get to choose how you want to be in your life, like be like big B, big E. You know, how you want to be. What's your state of being? What meaning do you make out of life? Like, I just, you know, recently read your book. And, you know, there were some, you know, we both have tough circumstances we've been through in our lives, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? So is everyone else. It's called being born, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Things happen to us. But it doesn't matter what happens. It's the meaning we make out of them. It's the meaning we make out of them when they happen and 5 minutes later after they happen and 10 minutes later after they happen, because the meaning changes. Sometimes it gets worse. Sometimes we put so much emphasis on sometimes the smallest thing that happened. So in this education, you get to really look at the event and then really see what meaning you want to make of this event. So to give you more power, freedom, self-expression, and peace of mind, which again is transformation. We are transforming an event, right? You've had events happen in your lives, and in reading your book, you've looked at them differently, right? After your recovery, after your transformation, after your awakening.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's the lessons learned and what you do with those lessons that are so important. And when you were talking about your experience with the nun and the transformation you felt after your contact with her, I was thinking, just in terms of any of our interactions with other people, each and every interaction transforms us if we allow ourselves to be open to that experience. And even if we aren't at some level, there is a subtle change that takes place because we're exchanging vibrations, energy, ideas, emotions, what have you, thoughts. We happen to have a caller, and I would also like to talk about some of your spiritual studies. Would you mind taking the caller and see if they have any questions for you?
I would love to.
Okay. Hang on, caller. I'm having a little trouble getting to you. Oh, there you are. Hi, you're live on Different Strokes for Different Folks. Who am I speaking with, please? Area code 352. Are you present? Well, I'll tell you what. If you are shy, that's perfectly okay, and you're welcome to keep listening. If you do want to talk to Dr. Steve, please hang up and call back so that I'll know that for some reason we weren't able to reach you, and we'll try again. Can you talk a little bit about your what brought you to India to study Ayurveda?
Well, I actually started studying Ayurveda here in the United States through books. I had a patient come in. I closed my eyes. I can see it, remember it. She said, "Did you ever hear this Ayurveda? I've been studying some and practicing some, and so I've looked at so many things: natural hygiene, macrobiotics, different forms of juicing and fasting." And this was around 1991, and I was already in India in 1990, but really not to study Ayurveda. But when I looked at Deepak Chopra's book, Perfect Health, which is really still one of the most practical that I give to people on Ayurveda, it was amazing because it explained why all these different modalities that we use work, because it's all about energy. So in Ayurveda, which I'm giving a workshop here in Albany tonight, on weight loss and detox, you always have to have a good title because people don't know what this word Ayurveda means, but it's thousands of years old. So Ayurveda means the science of life or the science of longevity. It was developed by observing people, not by experimenting on them, but observing. And when I read the material and I read the books, I read many books on the topic before I actually went to India the next time to study, I realized it's how people of India live their lives. It's a natural way of living, living a way that's unique to your body type. So they have different mind-body types. In English, you might talk about air, fire, and water. But in Ayurveda, we talk about vata, which is mostly air, pitta, which is mostly fire, and kapha, which is mostly earth or water element. And these elements are different in different foods. So we take like an element like a cracker. So imagine, David, you ate 20 crackers in a row without drinking any water.
Oh my.
Oh, my God. Right.
I wouldn't be able to. My mouth would be full of cracker crumbs.
That's right. We'd be dry mouth.
Yeah.
And then later it would dry out our stomach and our colon, and we'd suffer from that because it's too much dryness for the body. Now, if we looked at something like a jalapeno pepper, right? Do you ever cut a jalapeno pepper and then by accident touch your eye? Burning.
No, thank you. Yeah, oh boy.
Yeah, so that's that fire. You know, when we eat fiery foods, we sweat because it increases the metabolism of the body. And then there's like foods like ice creams and yogurts that are, you could take right yogurt out of the refrigerator container an hour later, still cold because it has a viscosity. It has a way of holding that cold because it's a heavy energy. So we have light energies, we have fire energies, we have heavier energies, and all these are present in every cell of our body, in every kind of food, but in different proportions. So like the difference between, say, coal and a diamond, right, made out of the same thing. You take coal and you put pressure on it for thousands or millions of years, and you get diamonds, right? Difference between coal and gold. Well, people go, well, gold is worth so much more. It's really not. We just made that up. If you were on an island and you were cold, you hope you'll have coal, not gold, because that's what you need to heat. You need different qualities based on your unique body type. So if you have a body type that's very fiery, you know, a person who has maybe red skin or gets acnes or pimple or high blood pressure or ulcers, you'd want to eat food that's more cooling to the system. But if you had a body type that's frail and thin, maybe susceptible to colds and flus, you'd want to eat a diet that's more warming, maybe slightly heavy. If you were someone who was very overweight, maybe had congestive disease or diabetes, you'd want to eat a diet that's lighter and warmer. So this is what we talk about in Ayurveda. We look at seasons. We look at seasonings, like spices. We look at food groups. We look at ways of moving and ways of being. So that's basically what Ayurveda came from, was observing people, how they moved, what they ate, how that make them feel, how that make them move, how did that affect their personality. That was a long explanation for a short question.
Well, no, it was fascinating. I mean, I had no idea it would transcend into what we ate, too. I mean, if it's a sister science of yoga, I figured it would be an integration of mind, body, and spirit. Now, does it involve movement as well, comparable to yoga?
So yoga being a sister science is part of how we move. So you might look at a body type and say a body type is very thin or even frail. You'd want to do yoga that was more graceful, yoga that was more flowing, yoga that was more even restful. If you had a body type that was very strong, very muscular, maybe even heavy, you'd want to do a yoga that was more strengthening, more physical, holding postures longer. So yoga is like the sister science in the way of, you know, you can do yoga to get a clearer mind, clearer body, clearer direction in life. Also, the way you eat affects that too. You know, we can eat a certain way to feel lighter, to feel freer, to be more free from disease, to having a clearer mind. So in that way, Ayurveda dictates the food we eat, dictates the way we move in life, dictates, you know, possibly what we even wear. Like today was quite cold in the parts that we live, so I dressed warmer. That's, in some ways, Ayurveda. It's cold out. It's windy out. So I wore a sweatshirt with a hood. I wore pants. I wore socks. If it was 70 degrees like it was just, 2 days ago here, I was wearing shorts and sandals and a T-shirt. You know, it dictates us to have a homeostasis with our surroundings outside of us, and to create a homeostasis inside our body. You know, so the heart functions well, the stomach functions well, the colon functions well, you know, the joints are functioning well. All that has to do with Ayurveda, and the way we diagnose that in Ayurveda, some people know, they looked in magazines, they take questionnaires to find out if they're more vata, more pitta, more kapha, more air, fire, or water. But the ancient way is to take the pulse, and this is something I've studied for about 25 years, is we touch the pulse to feel the energies, to feel what we call the doshas of the body, where the body is overactive, overaccumulated, aggravated in that way.
Well, it sounds very adaptive in nature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what we have to be. The reason why we stay alive, I mean, right, temperature is, 32 today, you know? And 2 days ago it was 70 degrees. But my internal temperature is 96, right? That's
right.
Homeostasis. When we eat foods that are too heavy, our body has to transform that heaviness into the proper properties of our body. You know, I can eat an apple or I can eat a hamburger. It still has to make eye cells and ear cells and heart cells and blood. Now, does it take the same energy if you eat an apple or you eat a hamburger? People say, well, you know, they have calories. That's what's really important. But how much work does the body have to do to digest something that's more natural than something that's unnatural. So based on our body type, like for me, if I eat very acidic food, because I have a lot of pitta, a lot of fire, if I eat very acidic food, I'll get an ulcer. I actually had one when I was younger. But I didn't know that I was eating this acidic food and that was causing my problem. So I already have enough fire. I don't need to add fire to my body. I need to add foods that, so if you had a fire, say you're on the lake and you make a fire, you just start the fire out with what? Little kindling, right? Maybe a little newspaper, some twigs. We have to look at our digestion like that. So we put food in our bodies that our bodies can digest well. So we put a little bit of food in, we get the digestion started. In Ayurveda, we might use ginger. We might use some kind of pickle to stimulate the digestion. Then we put in food that's very easy to digest, and the fire starts to build on that. And then we might put food in the middle of the meal that's a little heavier, and the body then works with that. And then we don't eat till we're too full, because the body needs this room to digest this food. Digestion is extremely important in Ayurveda. What foods we take in is important in how we can digest them. So I have trouble digesting tomatoes. It's just particular for my body type. So even an organic tomato, the purest tomato just picked off the vine, it may be not the best for my body type, for my individual body type. Maybe an apple would be better, even if the apple wasn't as pure as the tomato. So again, we have to eat foods that work for our body type, that work for our digestion. What we're doing this next in the next few hours here in Albany is we're talking about a special mung bean soup fast, or a khichdi fast, where we're going to take a few days out of our life, 3 to 5 days, and do some fasting. Not fasting on water, not fasting on air. We're going to fast on one kind of food, call it a mono diet. And that gives the body a rest. People say, oh my God, my arthritis pain went away. My colon issues went away. I feel lighter. I feel clearer. They say, what's the magic in the soup? And I always have to say, well, there is none. It's what you're not eating. If people can figure out by not eating their regular diet, and they get better, and they start eating their regular diet again, or certain foods in their regular diet, suddenly the body has trouble swallowing it. The body gets a stomach upset or gas immediately after taking it in the body. Then we know that these foods might not be the best for us. And Ayurveda gives you a guide to that.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering, was how people can tell what their body composition is. Is it done through just eliminating certain foods from diet and then incorporating them back in to see what foods agree or disagree? Or is there some other science to it?
Yeah, there's many different methods. Like observation is a method. Like if I eat bread with a lot of gluten in it, I don't consider myself tolerant, but possibly gluten sensitive. But if I take bread, just bread, white bread, haven't done it in a while, I almost have trouble swallowing it. If I eat rice, not everyone happens with rice, but for me, if I eat rice, I'll get the chills. And guess what? My son, the exact same thing. So sometimes observing how your body responds to food. That's one way. There are these little tests you can take in books. Perfect Health has a test. Science of Self-Healing by Dr. Vasant Lad has a test. You take this test to find out which mind-body type, which uniqueness, which what we call dosha, is more out of balance. And when you can find out what's more out of balance and work on that with diet, with lifestyle, with exercise, with meditation, with yoga, you can bring the body into balance. One of the ways to prescribe Ayurveda more exactly is to find someone who could take pulse. And from this pulse analysis, and there are many people who do it throughout the world, you can find out exactly, hone in on what's going on. So as I said, this nun came to see me, and it was this wonderful experience. And when I touched her pulse, I touched a part of her body. And I said, well, what's going on here? And she said, oh, I had a hernia there since I was a small child. And we connected the hernia with what she was eating because of the bloating it was producing, which was then producing some back pain and low energy. So sometimes the pulse allows you to go right to that area, right to that block in the body, right to that organ that's having some kind of dysfunction. The other way to do it is like peel the onion. Cleaning up the diet, and we can do that with mono diet fast. We can do that by just eating a more healthful diet, eating cleaner, eating more whole foods, drinking more water instead of other beverages. We can do that with meditation. We can the mind every day on a way of quieting the mind, quieting the body. We can do yoga. That's a wonderful way to look into how the body is doing by moving the body. We move the body and we go, ooh, body's stiff. This part doesn't work as well. When I eat this food and I do yoga, I feel sluggish. So again, observation is a really important part. And that's what I do with my patients. They come in, they have a consultation, they make some changes in their life, we talk on the phone. They make some more changes, we talk on the phone. They might come back in a month to 3 months, and we move further in the process.
Well, it all sounds like it's a big balancing act.
It is.
You know, I certainly have not explored the body part of my life enough other than overcoming some things that were toxic influences to my body and which boomeranged as far as my emotional and spiritual health went too. So I can see the balance from that standpoint. What recommendations would you make to somebody that is not pursuing something like Ayurveda, in layman's terms, that they might be able to help achieve some balance? Of course, you've talked a lot about diet. What other suggestions would you have?
Well, you know, something simple, like I said, some kind of mono diet. Like, take something that can be simple to make. You can have brown rice and green vegetables, or they have all these different simple soups that you can make. But give your body the same thing every day for a few days. And people are like, well, what do you do if you're hungry and you want a snack? Well, you simply eat more of the same thing. So mono diet is very powerful. Drinking water instead of other beverages, especially sugar beverages or artificially flavored beverages or caffeinated beverages, even flavored beverages. Start a program of increasing the intensity in the body. I think we talked about that last show. Is do some walking, but with some intensity. We call it high intensity interval training. So you walk slowly for 2 minutes and then walk as fast as you can for sometimes 10, 20, 30 seconds, even up to a minute, depending on the shape you're in. You can then walk for a minute slowly again, and then intensely for a minute, and then slowly again. So intensity has to do with the individual. If it's intense for you to walk to the bathroom, if that gets you out of breath, then practice walking to the bathroom a number of times a day, whether you need to go or not. If walking up a flight of stairs is intense for you, use that for your intensity. You know, I have built up to a point where I have to mountain bike with big, thick tires up a really sharp hill, and that's intensity for me. But it took me time to do that. You know, skiing, I ski very intensely, and then I rest on the lift up. There are many different ways. You can do it with yoga. You can do it with running. You can do it with walking. You can do it with, you know, Tai Chi, different things like that. You know, our biggest problem, my grandmother used to say, you know, the earlobes have these little flaps, the nose has ways to close off the nose, the eyes have lids, but the mouth has teeth and lips, because what goes into our mouth, so, you know, things can't get into our mouth unless we put them in. We have, you know, God gave us all these ways to control what we put in our mouth. We have to pick it up. We have to unwrap it. We have to do a lot of things. We have to go shop for it. We have to go buy it. So controlling the diet, though it seems so hard, if you take just 3 or 4 days and eat very simply, a lot of your cravings will start to go away. I mean, you've done a lot of work on recovery, David. You know, everything has its time. There's some drugs and medications and different things that take sometimes weeks or months to break the cravings, sometimes years. Mm-hmm. But food like sugar and caffeine and all that, 3, 4, 5, 6 days, and you're done. You're over that pull from the mind, from the body. So it's much simpler than something like cigarettes or heroin or oxycodone. So you're talking a few days, but you have so much control because you actually have to put it in your mouth. Now, the other thing you might want to control for a few days is the emotional junk food, internet, TV, radio, not including Blog Talk Radio. But there's different ways we can go on a fast of the information. I have a good friend, I call him an infomaniac, just constantly putting information in and not taking action. So food fasting, information fasting. We can just take time to be still. Even 5 minutes in our day, just being still makes a huge difference. That's one thing my spiritual teacher, Saima, has taught me, is just take a few minutes to be still every single day, maybe 5 minutes in the morning. If the body is really tired, sometimes even laying down for just 5 minutes, just stilling the body. These little things can really bring more vitality, more energy, more zest to life.
Well, it sounds to me as if you're talking about detaching from different things, different behaviors. I heard Anthony DeMello say that it is human to be addicted or to attach yourself to outer circumstances to try to make yourself feel better, people, places, and things. And that just doesn't work. It all is an inside job. And we need to work from within. And I like what you were saying about taking a time out to be still and just get in touch. And that's such a wonderful way to get in touch with mind, body, and spirit, and to try to focus on whatever the present need is. What do you think about that?
Well, be still and know that I am God. You know,
there you
go. It all starts from that. Let's break that down. You know, be, capital B, capital E. Our state of being, it's really the only thing we have 100% control of. You know, the sun's going to come up and down whether we like it or not. It's going to get colder in the winter in Syracuse whether we like it or not. There's lots of life that we really have no control over. And do we really have control even over our physical body? You know, it does what it does at times. It ages. Can we stop that? But we can control what meaning we give it, which controls our state of being. You know, it's not, as I said, we can do the act or we can move into a state of being, which changes in an instant. That's where transformation starts, in the state of being. Be still. So it's not saying do still. It's saying be still. Like that state of stillness can happen while you're walking, while you're talking, while you're singing. Because you're being still. And know. There's a knowingness, not a knowledge, not a fact, but a truth, a knowingness. And powerful statement there is. It's a statement of power. I am. It's a statement of, you know, if we walk around and say, I am tired, I'm worthless, I am hungry, that's a powerful statement. But instead we're saying, be still and know. Know, big T, truth. Know that I am God, that you are God incarnate. You know? If God is everywhere and everything, then so are we part of that. And we manifest in our lives from that, be still and know that I am God. Just say that to yourself a number of times a day and move from that and see what happens in your life.
Well, I think it's so important to watch what you connect the I am statement to, because as you say, that is the most powerful statement in the universe. It's a very affirmational statement. And so many times we can connect that to seeming negatives. There's no right or wrong or good or bad in life. It's all good. But we tend to perceive things as good and bad. And it really is negative and positive energy. And as you say, we create and manifest our own realities through our personal power. And so I think it's very important to be careful when you are saying, I am something, or to recognize, if, for example, if you are tired, to express that as, I'm feeling tired, instead of defining yourself as tired. There's a subtle difference to that.
My spiritual teacher even says something even, that the body is tired. Not
yeah.
even making it yours. Just the body is tired. The body
is
hungry. I like
that.
Because it's not you. It's the vessel. And you got to take care of this vessel. You know, if your vessel is aggravated, if your bucket is leaking, you're worried all the time, like you're going to run out. So you have to take care of this vessel that we call the physical body. You have to take care of even your satsang, your group that's around you. Really affects you, you know? When someone, like you were saying, like, I am tired, I am hungry, when someone comes to you and says something, you get to choose the meaning of that. If someone says, hey, you're worthless, you can say, I am God. Like, you don't have to buy into this environment. But imagine if you create an environment inside the body, outside the body, the people around you, then it's easier to grow and transform that way. You know, they say, you know, pressure makes diamonds, but it also makes rubble. Like, you know, sometimes surrounding yourself with challenging people and eating things that challenge the body to be well, it's very hard to transform that way. You can, but you need a tremendous amount of practice. So sometimes practicing transformation, it's easier to do it in an environment of transformation. That's why whenever my spiritual teacher comes around, I go see her. When I have a chance to go to church on Sundays, I go to church. When I have a chance to serve others, like the handicapped skiing, I do that. I'm here in Albany. Though I'm teaching, I'm the teacher, I get to be around these great people who I'm teaching. So I put myself in places where transformation happens. And then when I come to a situation that's maybe tougher, I have this practice already. I've practiced transformation.
Well, I'm curious about the adaptive skiing that you instruct. How does that work, and what kind of challenges are involved with some of your pupils?
You know what? It is totally inspiring to do that. And what inspires me is not me. It's these beautiful people who come there with, you know, sometimes missing a limb, a leg, sometimes an arm. Sometimes they happen to be blind or blind and deaf or have different mental abilities, challenges, developmental abilities and challenges. And what you're doing is you're assisting them towards their potential. And that assists me towards my potential. You know, I have to be even bigger and better, especially a better skier. You know, you have to lift up to lift someone else up. Remember I talked about that self-full?
Mm-hmm.
So when
mm-hmm.
I show up for skiing, I show up early. I get out there on the slopes, take a run before to make sure my body's working well. I eat properly. I dress properly because I don't want to be distracted when I'm serving someone else. And the people that we serve are just, we have a number of veterans who lost limbs, you know, in war, and they ski in these little mono ski sleds, and they're rock stars. You know, we have people that ski on one leg using these two special poles. We have people who are guided to know this guy David skis down the expert slopes. All we have to do is tell him when he's in the middle of the slope and where, you know, we keep him in the middle between obstacles. But he just skis. He has trust in us. We have trust in him. And we keep in communication. We do a Bluetooth kind of microphone system. And it's amazing. It's amazing how we might look at someone. There's a one kid with cerebral palsy. And some of the instructors are like, we're never going to get this kid to ski. He has too much movement in his upper body. And then one ski instructor goes, well, how do you stand still? And he put his hands on his knees and braced his body. And he goes, ski like that. And he's an amazing skier, hard to keep up with at times.
Wow.
We have kids with different ranges on the autism spectrum or, you know, that are just, you know, some of them are amazing skiers. They ski in the Special Olympics. And they ski down mogul fields. I ski down the edge of the mogul field because I don't ski moguls that well. They just slide through them. You know, I went up on the lift with this one kid who was non-communicative until he started to sing a song very, very low. And I'm like, I know this song. And we sang Beatles songs on the way up the lift. It's just, it's inspiring to help someone towards their potential. And happens to be skiing.
I think you've underscored an important part of the human experience, and that is to serve others. We are not here for ourselves. We're here as one expression of God manifesting in various permutations of the human experience to help one another. And on that note, I think we're going to finish up, Steve. I thank you for joining me again today.
The last line is to be self-full. Make sure you are fully functional and flowing over. And help people with what overflows your cup. Then you'll never feel scarce. You'll always
feel
more and more.
Thank you for that. I appreciate that. So now
you're
we can pause and reflect upon the idea that we are all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There's no real thing as separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience who are having a spiritual experience. Have a great week, and remember, whatever you dream, you can realize.